My name is Emma Katz. For anyone who is a regular for Neely, great to see you. Sorry about that. For anyone who is unfamiliar with Neely, Neely is the women's initiative of the YU Torah Mitzvah and Kollel in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining this evening. I will be posting in the chat other ways that you can find out about all the Neely programming that goes on, from our regular weekly shiurim to special events, pre-holiday shiurim, and everything in between. Coming up between now and Pesach, we will be having a ton of exciting programming. Keep an eye on your inboxes, your Instagram, your Facebook to see everything that will be coming up. And again, I'll be posting all that information in the chat. Tonight's event is one that I am very excited about, specifically in this time period leading up to Pesach. I know nobody wants to think about it, but now that Purim is officially over, I'm allowed to talk about it. Pesach is coming in just under a month, and Emir Tashem, we will be learning. I know I see people covering their ears. It's going to be okay. I promise. It's going to be okay. We are entering into this time period in which we talk about the exodus of the Jewish people, that the Jewish people left Egypt. Right. And it says in the Haggadah that every person is meant to see themselves.
Some women making their exodus.
That every person is meant to see themselves as if they themselves are leaving Egypt. That we are meant to sit at the Seder, and we're not meant to just think about some obscure story of the Jewish people leaving Egypt. We're meant to really relate it to our own lives. And I think that for this year's Journey of Inspiration, giving the time of year and just the year that we've had, that all of us want to look ahead to something better, something greater than where we are right now, it's a perfect time to talk with these three incredible women that we will be hearing from tonight, Mrs. Ojeni Kohanchi, Mrs. Maggie Barnatan, and Mrs. Cheryl Leon, who will be sharing their stories of coming to America. Each of them came from very different places, and as I'm sure we'll hear, had very different experiences with the transition. But something that each of them share is that they made that transition. They made that physical journey from somewhere else to living here in our community in Chicago. So tonight, I want to listen to their stories and have it help us to understand how we can relate to the Exodus story, how we relate to coming to a new place, adjusting to a new culture, getting used to seeing new things around us. And I also want to gain an awareness of the different people that live in our community, that we think that we all live, obviously now with Zoom, I don't know where all of you live, but majority of us live in Chicago, and we think, okay, many people are just like us. But really, each and every person has a story to tell. So thank you so much for joining tonight to hear just a sampling of these stories. We are going to start tonight with Mrs. Ojeni Kohanchi. Ojeni is originally from Tehran, Iran. She then lived in Austria, in LA, and finally ended up here in Skokie, Illinois. So, Ojeni, take it away. We look forward to hearing your story tonight.
Hi, do you hear me? Yes, you hear me? Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be speaking to you and sharing my journey. As you mentioned, I was born and raised in Iran, Tehran, the capital of Iran. And I lived there with my family. I have an older brother. And the process was that, you know, I'll give you a little bit of a background. For someone who is Jewish and for someone who wants to leave Iran, it's not that easy. Getting a passport is not easy. You know, at any point of time, they could just, you know, say you're Zionist, you're anti-Islam. So you have to be very careful as to how you leave. I remember I was told not to say bye to any of my friends. You know, very hush-hush. That was the process. It took my family about 2 years to be able to get a passport and our ticket to leave. And the way that we did it, the safest way that we did it was my mom, my brother, and I decided to leave first and, you know, not to make anyone suspicious. And my dad would follow later, about 45 days later. And we had to leave before my brother would turn 14. That's the year that you get processed into the system to join the army. And once that happens, it becomes very difficult. So we tried to do it before that. You know, we got our passport. We said bye to my grandparents. I didn't know that we're not going to see them again. Later on, my grandmother was able to leave and join us in LA. We made our way to Vienna, Austria. That's the process that everyone has to do in order to get a visa to come to the U.S. When we came to Vienna, it was on a Saturday. My family was not that religious at that point. The level I would say that we were on, we in Iran, we drove to Shul, we ate out. Obviously, we kept kosher in the house. I actually went to an all-Muslim school. I was the only Jewish girl there. And it was just very different. My brother did go to a Jewish school. I think my dad even worked on Shabbat, if I remember correctly. And my school, I think they knew I was Jewish, but somehow they were trying to, slowly they gave me the stone and the prayer. I don't know what it's called, the rug. You know, they do the praying in the middle of the day. And I remember the principal of school would come every single morning. The kids would line up before you would start to go in your classes per grade. You would line up. And she would come out and she would scream, you know, death to Israel, death to America. That's what they try to, you know, drill into the kid's head. Can you imagine being in that surrounding? I always tell my kids, you're so lucky to be, you know, to be able to go to a Jewish school from a young age, to be able to have Jewish friends, to be able to go to their house. I never had that. When we arrived to Vienna, we arrived with 14 suitcases. Anything you could imagine, we packed from A to Z. We didn't know what we were doing. It was actually the first time that we traveled out of Iran. We'd never been on an airplane before. We never traveled, so we didn't know what to expect, what to bring, what not to bring. And, you know, obviously there was no Google back then, no phone, so we couldn't do much research. We basically came in just not knowing anything, not knowing what to expect. When we arrived, obviously since it was on Shabbat, the organization that usually takes in the Jews who come in from Iran did not come to pick us up. We had to wait until Shabbos finished over there for them to send the driver to come pick us up. There were two other families who flew with us, and they managed to get into the car first, leaving my mom, my brother, and I behind with 14 suitcases, sorry. And we were there. We didn't know what to do. It was 1 a.m. At that time, my mom decided just to call a cab. And for us to head to the building. Now, once we got to the building, it was very late at night. We got there, they said there's no room, there's no entry room for us to sleep there. Now imagine, you know, my mom, when she did this, she was my age. I can't imagine doing this at this point in my life. You know, imagine going there, you don't have a room, you don't have any family. You're tired. You travel for so long. You're with all these suitcases. You're with two little kids. Finally, thank God, you know, there was a family who came. They said, don't worry, come sleep in our room. Now, let me paint a picture for you of how the living situation was there. The organization's name was Rav Tov. There was a really good rabbi, Rabbi Michael, who really, would go above and beyond to help all these Jews who would come. He would give them a place. Obviously, you had to pay rent. And he would just offer anything that you needed. We managed to find a place to stay after a week of staying at someone else's apartment. Now, the apartments, you basically enter. You have these huge doors. I can't even paint the picture for you how tall and big these doors were, heavy doors. You walk in, no elevator, very, very old buildings. And basically each unit of the apartments have, you know, between 3 to 4 bedrooms. And each bedroom is for one family. So let's say, you know, you're a family of four, you would take one bedroom. Now, those units had one bathroom for all the families. So if it was four families, you share one bathroom, a tiny kitchen. Our shower was actually inside the kitchen. It was very weird. Don't ask me. And you basically had a chart when someone's allowed to take a shower, when someone's allowed to cook. It was just a very different lifestyle. My parents, thank God, they packed everything from A to Z, anything you could imagine they packed. And that actually helped us to keep the costs low in terms of, you know, not wanting to spend money over there. Now, keep in mind, when you're leaving Iran, and if they know you're Jewish, you're very limited as to what you could take out. That includes cash, that includes jewelry, that includes anything you could imagine. And sometimes you just have to bribe your way out, whether it's in the airport, whether you know, and anything you could imagine, you just have to bribe your way out of it. I think my mom said that each person at that time was able to bring about $1,500 cash per person. So do the math. It was four of us in total. My dad came 45 days later. That's all the cash you come out with. Now you have to pay rent. Obviously, if there's anything that you have to buy there, you know, that comes out of the pocket. And we lived there for about, I think, 9 months. Before making our way to the U.S. Now, the process is that you have to go in for an interview. They call you in to the embassy, and they interview you. They want to know why you're leaving Iran. Were you in danger? It's not that easy. They won't just give you a visa to leave to the U.S. So, you know, to have that story of me being in a Muslim school and them making me pray every day. Obviously I mumbled whatever they said, but they really taught me their prayer, and I would have to shout, you know, that slogan that the principal would say every morning, you know, death to America, death to Israel. Obviously I would mumble it. And they would just ask you, were you in danger? And surprisingly, some people in their interview would say, you know, I was a doctor, I lived a very comfortable life, and guess what? They would fail their interview, and they would not be able to get a visa to move to the U.S. These people would be there for a year, year and a half, until they would get a second chance for an interview. Some people would even consider going back to Iran. That's how, you know, difficult it was for them. Each person has to tell a story, like I said, of why you were in danger. You know, my mom, when she was in school, when she was in college, they accused her of being anti-Islam. They threatened her that they're going to kick her out. They might even throw you in jail. If you're Jewish, they could pretty much do whatever they want. I don't know if anyone has watched the movie Tehran. It's on TV. I remember after the first episode, I couldn't watch it because it was just so real to me. I experienced it. I know how they treat Jews. My grandfather, he was working And when he was walking back from work, they knew he was Jewish. And he was proud to say that he was Jewish. They threw him in a car, blindfolded him, took him to his home, asked him where he keeps cash, took all his jewelry, took pretty much whatever that was valuable. And they could just do whatever they want. And if you would go to court, or if you would want to, you know, report this kind of behavior, they would say, sorry, you're Jewish. You have no right. They could do whatever they want. That's pretty much your life. So, you know, there all these stories we had to say in the interview. I don't know if I mentioned when a boy, my brother, we mainly wanted to leave before my brother would turn 14. That's when they start drafting you into the army. So thank God we got the okay, and we were able to leave after a few months. And we arrived to the US. Now, you need someone to sponsor you also. Just keep that in mind. You need a family member or a relative that they know and you have proof of to sponsor you in order to be able to come to the US. Once we arrived, we stayed by my mother's brother, who lived in LA at the time. And we were by him for a month until we were able to find an apartment to move into. And the rabbi that we were in touch with over there, he guided my parents which school and which high school my brother should go to. Now, when you go to school, I didn't know English. I didn't know Hebrew. I would sit it in class for 8 hours straight, having to, you know, learn two languages at the same time. Being a new country, I had no friends. It was just very difficult. I remember I would come home crying and I would beg my mom. I would say, I don't want to go back. I can't sit in class. I don't understand what they're saying. And kids were mean. Kids were very mean. They wouldn't talk to you. They wouldn't play with you. It took me a very long time to get comfortable. It took me a very long time to find my own group of kids. I remember my brother had a very similar situation. Obviously, he was in high school, so, you know, it was a little bit more difficult for him. My parents, my mom was actually able to find a job working for the same organization, Rostov, in LA. And my dad at that time, since he didn't know much English, they just said that, you know, they would just pay my mom to work. So we only had one income. And that went on for a little while until, you know, thank God, my parents were able to start their own business in a similar field. And I'm so happy to, you know, to have the opportunity to been able to do it at such a young age. I can't imagine people who did it much later on in their life. Definitely a very big adjustment to what I was used to. And if there's anything else that you want me to add, Mrs. Katz.
That was great. Really, really so crazy to hear. If anyone has questions, I meant to add this in the beginning, please write them in the chat. And at the end, we'll have time for a question and answer. So for now, I think that was really interesting. And I'm sure people have many follow-up questions. So either message me privately in the chat or just write in the chat and I will address them to all the participants at the end. Thank you so much, Ojeni, for sharing.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mrs. Maggie Barnatan, who is originally from Buenos Aires. I know I didn't pronounce that right, but Buenos Aires, Argentina. and now lives in Lincolnwood. Mrs. Karen Kluke is going to be helping Maggie at points with some of the translating. So Maggie, take it away.
Okay, hi. I don't know where is Karen. I can't see her. Okay, so I want to try to talk in English. So it's something that's very hard for me. Karen, she can help me. And if someone don't understand, also can. So we came to Chicago almost 5 years ago. My husband was in the yeshiva Tells for 4 years, and he was very, very happy here in Chicago. And he always said, like, I want to move to Chicago. I want to move to Chicago. And I always say, like, okay, it's fine. Okay. One day, who knows? We were living in Argentina. Everything was good. We had a restaurant there. And then the economy and everything came very bad. And we just decided to move to Chicago. And when we came, was very hard because I didn't speak any word in English. But thank God I found very, very good friends, very good people here that helped me a lot and take a lot of patience to understand to me always. I was sitting on Chavez and I didn't understand any word. I was like this. And my husband always say, you can learn, you can do it. So today I'm so happy that I'm here and I can have a conversation and I can understand and everything. And for my kids, it was very hard in the beginning because they didn't speak any word in English also. Like, they went to school, and thank God for one of my son had the teacher was born in Argentina, so she's speaking in Spanish. So one had the teacher that was amazing for me because for the conference and everything was fine. So, but also my oldest came one day and say, Mom, I didn't understand anything. Like, I'm there, I'm sitting there, and I don't understand. So it was a very long time to get in.
¿Quieres decir?
Que tomó tiempo que podamos entender inglés y todo eso.
So, according to her, it took her a long time to understand and transition and help her kids to transition into, like, in the system. But I think she did an amazing job, and she was very quick. She understood, and she was able to communicate faster than she thought. Okay.
And then my husband always, he had a relation with the rabbis and the yeshiva tells and everybody there. So he was keeping talking to them. And one day he said, look, I want to go to Chicago. I have an oportunidad, Karen.
Opportunity
to open a restaurant there. So I want to see. So I said, no, I don't want to move. I'm very scared. No. He said, but you have to see how amazing is the life there in America. It's nothing like in Argentina. I said, no, but my family, my friends, and everybody, like, I don't know. And the visa, it's also, like, it's very hard. So we came. We saw the school and everything. And then I said, okay, we can try. Why not? So we started to make the visa and everything. So we came in July 26th, I think. I don't remember. Yes, 2016. And so after that, we came with one visa, different visa that now Trump changed everything. So we can go to Argentina, but we don't know if we come back to Chicago.
We will be.
Yes. So I didn't see my parents until like 2 years ago. That's very hard for me. Like, I can't go to any simcha or something. My dad is a very bad situation, and it's not easy. But I hope, like, with Biden or Hashem, make our visa comes soon, Bezrat Hashem. So then Michal, my husband, he opened Evita, and people love it. That was amazing. Like, I was very, like, nervous about it. And Baruch Hashem, everything, now my life here, it's amazing. I love my life here. I don't want to go back to Argentina. I love the people here. The weather, it's my only
issue thing
that I can't. Like, 2 weeks ago, I said, no, I want to move. That's it. I'm done here. I love Chicago. I love the people. But this weather, it's not. It's crazy. So, but I'm so happy. And I'm so thankful.
Yeah, grateful. Thankful, grateful, yeah.
For everybody just, like, make me the everything here to be. Here. So, Mrs. Katz, if you have any question or something.
That was great. Thank you so much. And
I'm so sorry about my English, please. I'm sorry. And I'm so nervous. So it's to make me.
Don't worry. We do have some follow-up questions, but we'll save them for after Cheryl speaks. And then we'll come back with our questions to everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Mrs. Cheryl Leon is originally from, sorry, I lost my, it's a long name.
Should I help you out?
From St. John, New Brunswick, Canada. Right. I'm from Highland Park, which is next to New Brunswick in New Jersey. So that part was easy. So Cheryl is going to share her story, definitely not coming from as exotic a location, but definitely a story to share.
Okay, great. Thank you. First, I want to thank the most amazing Emma Katz, who took me from no to yes in about 10 minutes and convinced me that this story was one that needed to be told. So thank you, first of all, Emma. And Jenny and Maggie, your stories are absolutely amazing. You're a hard act to follow. But thank you. And to the, let me see, 90 people who are on tonight, thank you so much for being on. I have to say, it's a little nostalgic for me to be on tonight talking about this issue. This week is my father's 16th year at site. And tonight I'm talking about the small town that we come from, which was so beloved to him. So my hope and my prayer is that I do justice to it. So let's start. I have to admit that when I was a little surprised at being asked to be part of this panel. I'm hearing Tehran, I'm hearing Buenos Aires, and I have to say that I remember sending Emma back an email and saying, you remember I'm from Canada, right? It just didn't seem to fit. But after we spoke in more detail, she made me realize that I am a modern-day immigrant.
So what do we mean by that? When we routinely think of an immigrant, what comes to mind? And you think the old country, boat, poverty, right? Well, I remember my daughter Liat had a fourth grade ancestry project where she had to write a paper on someone in her immediate family who was an immigrant. She chose me. After checking all the requirements, in fact, I met the criteria. So she wrote the paper, and 2 days later, I get a call from her teacher. She explained that my story was not exactly what she was looking for. And when I asked her why, she replied, well, here in question four, for example. The question is, how did the person you chose immigrate to the United States? And Mrs. Leon, your answer was driving a white sports car across the Windsor border. Well, after having a good laugh, I realized that most people don't see this as an immigrant story. And at first, I didn't either. But it is. It truly is. In order to understand what got me to this place at this time, we need to backtrack a bit. I come from a tiny city which sits right on the Atlantic coast of Canada, right above Maine, and it's called St. John, New Brunswick. I am fifth generation Canadian, which means two things. Number one, that even my grandparents didn't have a European accent. And number two, more importantly, we were here for so many generations that we virtually were gratefully untouched by the Holocaust. Both French and English are required in school, and in its heyday, which was a little before my time, the Jewish community was about 250 families. In my day, it was challenging to even hold on to a rabbi in our one and only synagogue. But I will tell you, it was an outstanding place to grow up. Surrounded with the love of family, it was more of a simple way of life, which placed a premium on Jewish tradition, celebrating holidays, and keeping kosher. In fact, my family even arranged the complicated task of having kosher meat flown in from Montreal every few months, as that was the closest big city. And when I think of it now, it took a tremendous amount of effort, to say nothing of the incredible cost. However, as it happens with all of my generation in St. John, if you wanted to marry Jewish, you needed to move to a bigger city. Translated, that meant either Montreal or Toronto, and I chose Toronto. I remember going to my first Jewish student union event of about 225 people at the University of Toronto and thinking, oh my God, like everybody here is Jewish. I was thrilled when a few years later, my second and my two older brothers moved to Toronto, and shortly after them, my parents followed. We were all together again, and I had no intentions of moving anywhere else ever. That's when I met my husband. At that time, he was living in Chicago and came to a wedding of a friend in Toronto, and we ended up dating that weekend. Although he was very nice, I had no desire to leave Toronto. My whole family had just moved there, and plus, it was Chicago we were talking about, not just another Canadian city. It was in another country. It's funny. I have found that when I tell Americans this story, the reaction is pretty much like, what's the big deal? It's just Canada. And I promise you that if you ask a Canadian, they will tell you that there is a huge cultural difference. There is the impression that because we speak English and we live in North America, that we are exactly the same. Well, I'm here to suggest that that's not quite true. Regardless of coming from Canada, I had to go through the same immigration process as any other immigrant. The same paperwork, the same procedures, same waiting time. As a matter of fact, when I applied for citizenship, I even got flagged and had to come in for an interview. And what was the issue? Well, dating religious. I met, dated, got engaged, and married in an incredibly short amount of time. And apparently the customs immigration officer wasn't so thrilled with that. So he kept firing questions at me like, what's your husband's favorite color? I had no clue what my husband's favorite color was. I've learned it's green, but he was very upset and felt that this was a marriage of convenience. Convenience. You want to know what's convenient? Being Canadian. That was much more convenient. Unfortunately, the immigration officer once again then felt I was being way too unpatriotic. So at that point, I had to move on and take my immigration test. I was a wreck. My husband kept telling me not to worry. I just had to review the material and I'd be fine. Review the material? I couldn't just review U.S. history. I had never taken U.S. history. I took Canadian history. Now, don't judge. Canada does have a history. It's a little bit shorter than American, but definitely it has a history. And I will say, the forms of government, I would have done much better taking a British or an Australian citizenship test in that area as well, is because we were all part of the parliamentary system. And I'm still baffled in the, why a U.S. president can win the popular vote and still not be president. But that is for another time. And if you ask my kids, they still lovingly tease me about my Canadian accent and how I spell certain words. You spell the word color, C-O-L-O-U-R. And their favorite is always when they tease me about the last letter of the alphabet. Of course, I say Z, and they say Z. Now, after so many years, I've learned to say Z, but I love to bring up the old Z every once in a while just to embarrass them. Even in a discussion of cultural differences, Canadians are legendary for their polite behavior. The point is brought home best by an incident that happened to me a while back. I was in a minor car accident, for the record, not my fault. And a few days later, the insurance adjuster contacted me and he was furious. Why had I told the other party that I was guilty? Guilty? There was no way that I had said that I was guilty. Then he added, well, you told her how sorry you were. Sorry. And there, my friends, is where lies the cultural difference. I wasn't sorry because I caused the accident. I was sorry because she had gotten hurt. I still am in court with the issue, but I promise to never say sorry again. And there is a classic video going around, I'm not sure if you've seen it, of a parody showing one Canadian carjacking another. The first guy spends the entire time apologizing to the first guy, the second guy, for carjacking his car. He offers to drop him off wherever he wants to go and then proceeds to give him pocket change so that he isn't stranded anywhere. I know this is a joke, but the message is clear. We are not the same. In conclusion, what I'm trying to say is that the modern day immigrant comes in many different forms. No longer just a person who is fleeing from a persecuted country or simply looking for a better way of life. It is also those of us who find ourselves here for less dramatic reasons, but the cultural differences have been many, and the process was not always smooth or automatic, even being Canadian. Yet I recognize what a tremendous privilege it is to live in the United States, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But I am a modern day immigrant. Thanks.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much, Cheryl. And like you said it beautifully, you two are a modern day immigrant. And I feel like that's one lesson, even before we turn to questions, that I'm really taking away from this evening, that really immigrants come in every shape and form. And while Ojeni's story may sound more similar to the stories we're used to hearing of people fleeing from their country and having to find refuge in the United States, really everyone has their story. And I think that's so important to take from this evening. And that's the main message that I'm going to take from this evening. And now to turn to just a few questions we had. If anyone else has questions, feel free to write in the chat now. But the first question was directed to Ojeni, and it was, how old were you when you came to America?
When I left Iran? Came to?
Yeah.
So I was 8. I finished 3rd grade.
Okay. And the second question was for Maggie. What is it like for Jews living in Argentina? What was your life like there?
No, the life is very good for Jewish there. You have everything, you know, like it's, but it's a very, it's a big community.
Okay. And there are Jewish schools and...
Everything. Yeah, it's like here that it's... We have more Sephardim there, but...
Right. Okay. And then one question that I want to address to everyone, and we can, I guess, start with Cheryl and work backwards, is what was one thing that really took you by surprise in America? Like, what was most unexpected to you?
That people really kept to themselves a lot more. That could have just been a small town upbringing, but I was saying hi to everybody. And I learned I had to be a little bit more cautious.
Interesting. And Maggie, what surprised you most about coming to America?
Karen, ¿cuál es la pregunta?
¿Qué es lo que te sorprendió que llegaste cuando llegaste a Estados Unidos? ¿Qué es cuando llegaste? ¿Qué es lo que más te sorprendió?
How amazing they are. And the, like, the, what's the word? Chesed.
Mm-hmm. That you found that people helped you a lot when...
A lot, yes. Yes, like, I remember, I was here in my house. My house was empty. And I remember that everybody came with cookies and I want to invite you for Shabbos. And I... okay, I don't know who you are, but it's fine. Okay, I'm going like this. And I said, wow, how amazing are people here? Like in Argentina, no, you don't open the door to people that you don't know.
Wow. Okay, that's so interesting. And Ojeni, what most surprised you in coming to America?
I think just the fact that I was able to be in a Jewish school and have Jewish friends and be able to go to their house and eat at their house. I didn't have that opportunity in Iran. You know, I remember when I would go to my friend's house, my brother would tell me, make sure not to eat in their house, obviously, because, you know, they were not Jewish. But just to have that freedom to be able to have Jewish friends, to be able to have neighbors who were Jewish, and to be able to play with them. That was really, you know, that was really nice.
Wow. Did that take a long time for you to catch up? Like even you said, you came when you left when you were just finishing third grade. So if you had been in a Muslim school until that point, did it take you a long time to catch up in school or had you had that education at home?
You mean in LA, in California?
Yeah. Like once you arrived and you started Jewish school, did you feel like you were very behind? You were lacking the
skills? So they made me repeat third grade. We came, I think my mom mentioned it was our anniversary to come to the U.S., I think last week. So we came in February, and they made me, since we came in the middle of school year, they couldn't put me in fourth grade because I already missed the first part of school. So I had to repeat third grade.
Okay. So then that helped you to catch up.
Yes.
And I guess the last question that I want to end off with is if there's one lesson from your story that you want to give to the audience that you feel how people should relate to other people they may meet who came to America, what is that message that you would give over? What do you think would have made your transition easier or in some way how we can treat people who have recently come to America or have come to America at all, that would be meaningful. And we can start, let's start with Ojeni and go back.
Obviously, like I said, I came at a very young age and kids were not so nice. You know, I wasn't able to carry a conversation with them in English, even though they did know Farsi. I think just to remember that everyone comes with a story and everyone has challenges. and just to offer help and see if anyone needs anything. Just remember, it's very difficult to come to a different country. And, you know, it's a big culture shock. You don't know what you're getting yourself into. So just make sure to offer some help, be nice, and make sure you tell your kids to also be nice to kids who have immigrated from different countries or even from different states. Doesn't have to be somewhere else.
Definitely. And sorry, Jenny, we just had one more question for you. Do you still have family living in Iran?
I do. Actually, after we left, my grandfather passed away, so we never got to see him, my mom's father. My grandmother, my mom's mother, was able to leave along with my aunt. My dad's brother still lives there with his wife. And I believe from both sides, my parents have relatives there. But my uncle is the closest relative that I have there.
What keeps Jews in Iran? Like at this point, there still is a large Jewish population. What's keeping those Jews there? Is it too hard for them to get out? Is the community still thriving there? Like, what's keeping them from leaving?
You know, I ask this question all the time. I can't imagine why anyone wants to live there. Again, if you haven't left, you don't know the other side that's much better. How freely you're able to go to shul, to wear a kippah, to send your kids to Jewish school. I think it's just very difficult once you reach a certain age, just the thought of having to move to, you know, a different country, not knowing the language. It really scares people. It's very hard. And, you know, a lot of Jews, I think if they stayed, they either have properties there that they can't just get up and leave, or they have a good job and they're comfortable. Financially, they're comfortable. If they come to the U.S., that's not going to be the case.
Definitely. So interesting, because I think anyone who hears your story is like, yes, of course, everyone would want to leave, and anyone who hears what's happening in Iran. But it's true that you only know what's better once you've left. So that's very interesting.
I find it interesting that with COVID, I mean, I haven't been able to see my brother in Toronto, my brother in Israel for over a year, and I can just get an inkling of what Jenny must be feeling like, because I've always been able to have access to them. And COVID has really put a different spin on that for almost all of us, that we are like limited to where we can go and who we can see. And it's I don't know how your family does it. It's amazing.
I give my parents a lot of credit, you know, I'm the same age as my mom when she, you know, left. I can't imagine having to do that with my kids, you know, not knowing the language. You know, right now we have access to internet, Google, you know, anything that you want, you could just search. And within 5 minutes, you have a list of places you could go, where you could send your kids. You could learn the language. You know, we pretty much came not knowing anything. So I definitely
think it's a hard process regardless. Like I knew the language, and still it's very isolating when you come somewhere new. So all the more so what you had to deal with is amazing.
Thank you.
Definitely. And Maggie, what message would you give to us in how to treat people who have immigrated?
I think you have to be very strong for everything, because when we came alone, nothing, no friends, we didn't have anything when we came. So we just start everything, like we start over again, our life. So I make new friends, I make my house, I make like everything But in the beginning for me was very, very hard. The language was very hard for me. Like I couldn't talk to anybody in the beginning. Like if I want to say something, I need my husband, or I need a phone to Google Translator. And was very hard, but thank God I was very strong, and I have my husband with me always, my family and my friends now. They are amazing. I have an amazing friends. I have amazing neighborhood both. And that's my message. You have to be very strong when you move country.
Definitely. And Cheryl, what message would you give to either those who have immigrated or everyone else in relating to those who have immigrated to America?
From my own perspective, it's just, it is the isolation when you first get here. And like for all intents and purposes, you look at my case on paper and it should have been a no-brainer. It should have been just that easy. But like, once the dust settles and your husband goes back to work, and I wasn't going to school, I would have worked, but then I couldn't because of immigration. I was at home all day by myself. And just that social aspect of getting aware to meet people and how to start to fit in your new life. And I always say that my first new best friend was my mother-in-law. She was amazing. She just took me everywhere and we did everything together. And that was my introduction to the city. But it can be isolating. And a lot of people from when they hear my background, they assume a lot. They assume that, oh, she'll just be like, there's no reason to even offer. It's fine. She'll just fit right in. So I'm the complete opposite end of the spectrum of the two other speakers because they had challenges with language and what have you. I, on the other hand, no challenge with that, but people just assume that I was able to do these things just because I came from where I did. And there was a cultural difference and there was a difficulty just getting to meet people. So just be out there. If you see somebody new, it's always good just to embrace them and welcome them, which this community is so great for. So we're very lucky.
Definitely. Okay. Thank you so much to all of the speakers for speaking this evening. You are each so inspiring, and thank you for really taking us on your journey, letting us in to the path that brought you to our community. And thank you for being part of our community and adding so much to it. I hope that everyone is able to take inspiration from these three amazing, strong women and bring it with us as we go into Pesach, as we think about our own people leaving Egypt, transitioning to becoming a nation, and transitioning eventually to a new country in which we had never been. I hope we are able to take these messages and also apply them to our regular everyday lives and how we relate to other people and how we really build our community. So thank you so much for joining tonight. Again, I'm posting in the chat all of the other ways that you can connect to Neely. We have Facebook, Instagram, check out our website. You can join our WhatsApp group, all in the chat. And definitely be on the lookout for our upcoming Pesach programming. Thank you so much for joining. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.